Five, four, three, two, one.
I am Groot.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Now Show podcast. I'm your host, as always, Sam Hughes. I'm joined once again by my wonderful co-host, Lewis. Today, we have joined together to discuss Guardians of the Galaxy 3, the last element, the last installment of the Guardians trilogy, and the last MCU film directed and written by the departing James Gunn, who's going to join DC Studios, as we talk about DC every week. Aside from that, we're going to be looking at a few other films, such as Evil Dead Rise, which I'm going to be covering, of course, the horror correspondent, and you're going to be looking at The Unlikely Pilgrimage of Harold Fry, which are two thematically similar films, but perhaps on a different scale. How you doing, Lewis?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
I'm glad.
We do these in short bursts, don't we? We do like two close, and then we like wait a month, and then we do like two really close, and then we like wait 2 months.
Yeah, that's pretty much been our vibe recently.
Yeah, the last episode only came out recently. At least when we were recording this.
I know. Yeah. Hopefully there are no delays in the release.
Sam from the future here to tell you there were, in fact, delays to the release.
Oh, yeah, last week you took fucking ages to edit the fucking thing.
I did, yeah.
Recorded it like 6 days before it came out.
Yeah.
But, you know, no criticism or no judgment.
But our dynamic is you delay the recording, I delay the editing. That seems to be the thing.
Yeah, like when I used to edit, like I'd edit it the day after, like 99% of the time. Like, there's never really any delay to the release.
Yeah.
But then now you edit it, it takes ages. But the difference is that now since I've become a working man within the last year, it's been exactly a year, by the way.
Oh, nice.
I started working at my job.
Happy anniversary.
Thanks, mate. Worst year of my life. but yeah. Yeah, so that's the dynamic. If you're listening to this audio now and you're seeing the runtime being well over an hour, we have failed because we're going to try and make this a condensed one for once.
Yeah.
And we should probably do that. We should probably condense it by getting straight into this shit.
Yeah.
Can I start off with the what we've watched section, Lou?
Let's do it.
I'm going to go first because you go first because you're going to have to do the news after. So we'll you know, split our voices up a bit and we'll start with you now.
Oh, okay, fair enough. I haven't watched that much. I watched obviously this year a new Mission Impossible film comes out, so I'm going to try and catch up on the Mission Impossible films. So I watched Mission Impossible 1 and Mission Impossible 2. They were okay. They're very, very dated, like the technology and stuff.
It's very surprising. It's always very surprising when you realise that Brian De Palma directed
Mission Impossible. That is wild to me. Wild.
Does it feel De Palma?
Not really, no. I mean, there are a few moments of like his flair, but it doesn't feel like a De Palma film.
Yeah, mad.
It's wild. And then
it's kind of like the Aliens 3 of his catalogue.
Yes, it very much is. Another thing that I watched, this one is quite interesting. So Picture House cinemas across the UK are showing the Sight and Sound top 10 best films of all time over the next 10 months. Last month it was number 10, which was Singing in the Rain. And this month it was number 9, which is Man with a Movie Camera, which was described...
Ooh.
Yeah, I'd never seen this. I'd never seen this before. And it was described as part documentary, part cinematic art, which very much intrigued me. It's only just over an hour. It's 68 minutes. And it's one of those things where you can appreciate it for what it was at the time, but now it just seems very weird. Like it's very much just a man filming some stuff, but at the same time inventing these incredible techniques that now are commonplace. Like the worst films have the techniques that this film does, but this film did it first. So you kind of have to bear that in mind when you're watching it, that things like the tracking shots, even the slow-mo, the stop-motion animation, all of this was the first time it was done. It was pioneered in this film. And when you bear that in mind, you're like, this is done. Not only was it done for the first time, but it's done really, really well as well.
I think it's important to let the listeners that might not otherwise know that this film came out in 1925, right?
1929. But yeah, it's a very old film. So yeah, but it is fantastic. It is really cool to watch once you get on board with the fact that it is just someone filming stuff and doing it with a cinematic flair that had never been done at the time. And once you get on board with that, it's really, really cool. I also watched The Lighthouse. They showed that in the cinemas again. Haven't seen it since it came out. And The Lighthouse, since the past few months I've been watching horror films, The Lighthouse is one of the most, like, unsettling films I've ever seen. It's really uncomfortable. The ending with, spoilers, Robert Pattinson putting his hand in the lighthouse and him screaming and the noise gets all distorted, that is really unsettling, and that makes me really uncomfortable. I hated that the first time I watched it, and I hated it the second time, but, like, in a good way, if that makes sense, like, good hate. It just made me really uncomfortable, and it really is a fabulous film. Really pretty as well. And then I watched Transformers for the same reason as I watched Mission Impossible. There's a new Transformers film coming out. And, you know, I feel like they've been hated on a lot over the years. It actually goes quite hard. It's really fun just watching, like, these giant masses of metal clash into each other. It's really fun. And, you know,
I just want to say, I bring it up every week. It's binging Fast and Furious. I did that. I binged 80 Fast and Furious films right in like 5 days.
Yeah.
I think I draw the line at Transformers. I don't think I do it.
Wow. Well, they actually.
I hate Tom Cruise. If you said to me before the next episode of the podcast, watch all 7 Fast and Furious films, I think I could do it. If you told me watch 5 Transformers films, I don't think I could do it. I don't think I could do that.
Wow. Well, I actually quite enjoyed it. Michael Bay, he just knows what he's doing when it comes to action. Ambulance last year, one of my favourites of last year, unironically. And Transformers, nowhere near as good as Ambulance. But they are just fun. And I enjoyed them. I enjoyed them.
I think it says something about a director's career that you can only compliment them by also using the phrase that you enjoyed their film unironically.
That does say that does really sum up Michael Bay as a director.
Yeah. I actually like his films. Like, I actually think they're good. Like, that is not something that anyone ever says about Ridley Scott. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, nobody ever turns around and says, like, I enjoyed Raging Bull, like, unironically.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I genuinely like Hitchcock.
Unironically. Psycho is quite good, unironically. Yeah. then it was Star Wars Day, and it was also the 40th anniversary of Return of the Jedi. So I saw Return of the Jedi on the big screen, which was fun. I've also started rewatching the prequels, and I actually vibe with the prequels. I enjoy them. I find it really cool that at the end of it, the good guys lose. I think it's great.
I mean, that is cool, but yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it, really. Everything good about that trilogy can be found within the final, like, 25 minutes of the third film.
Yeah, that's true. But it's still great. Like, the highs are very high and the lows are very low, but there are a lot more lows.
Very long and very boring. The first one I watched relatively recently. My word, it's so drawn out.
The first one is by far the weakest. I still kind of vibe with it. I still kind of vibe with it.
There's no way anyone can convince me that that film is more enjoyable. There's no way you can sit through that entire film and think, I was happy for a greater number of minutes than I was during Rise of Skywalker. Like, I know everyone shits on Rise of Skywalker, but, like, at least it's fun.
Well, I suppose in a way, but I kind of love the...
It's like just 2 hours about the trade disputes.
Yeah, but I kind of vibe with it. Care. I kind of vibe with it. You know, really watching
the other
it now
is that the last 20 minutes is, like, quite cool. Everyone that comes at the cinema going, well, the Darth Maul fight was good. Yeah, what about everything that happened before that? All the trade disputes.
I just kind of vibe with it.
I'd randomly get shipped on Tatooine for, like,
my perspective has changed minutes. As I've grown up. I kind of like the prequels. I kind of vibe with the prequels. I watched
that
Batman
ageist
Begins.
Comment about the fact that I'm younger than you.
Yeah, it is. Your brain clearly hasn't developed enough to enjoy the prequels.
By the time I'm your age, I like the prequels, yeah.
Yeah, that'll happen.
How old are you? 24 or 25?
I'm 24.
Mad that your brain will be fully developed next year.
I know, yeah. Maybe that's why I'm starting to like the prequels.
Quite a disturbing thought, really.
I'm starting to like the prequels because my brain's nearly fully developed.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay.
I watched Batman Begins as well in the cinema. That was great. And the last thing I watched was... Yeah, Batman Begins. Very, very good.
What a picture. Maybe the best superhero film ever made.
Maybe. It is up there. It is up there. Is it better than Guardians 3? We will find out soon. The last thing I watched was the new Peter Pan and Wendy film, the live action Peter Pan and Wendy film from Disney.
What?
Did you not know that was happening?
I mean, I saw stuff about it in there, but I assumed it was like a trailer dropped or something.
No, it's the film has dropped on Disney Plus.
Whoa.
Yeah, I decided to watch it, and all I can say is that there is another bullet in my anti live action remake gun.
There's no way. Yeah, there's no way that film's good.
Yeah, it's not. But do you know who directed it?
Michael Bay.
You don't know who directed it, do you? Oh, this is going to be fun.
Who directed it?
The director of the live-action Peter Pan and Wendy was David Lowery of The Green Knight fame.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
The guy that did A Ghost Story.
Yeah.
What?
He did the live-action Peter Pan and Wendy.
Oh, I remember us talking about this on the podcast.
Yeah.
My god.
I can't believe that that's what he's doing with his time. But, you know, get that paycheck, I suppose. Wow. But yeah, it is shit. It is shit.
That you could almost argue it's the Aliens 3 of his career.
Yeah, and I don't enjoy it, ironically. Wow. It is, but it's not as bad as the live-action Lion King, though. That is still a plague on society.
Yeah.
But it is still very bad, so, you know.
I have a friend... who, well, not them, but I think their boyfriend went to go see the live action Lion King like 17 times.
Oh my god.
In the cinema.
I cannot think of a person I want to meet less than someone who watched the live action Lion King more than once, let alone 17 times. That sounds nice. Insufferable.
Yeah, that's fair. Shout out Glyn.
I hate him.
Yeah, nice.
That's it. That's all I've watched.
That's all you watched. Yeah. I've got far less to talk about.
Take it away, Sam.
I've watched one film that we're not reviewing, and we've already talked about on the podcast. I rewatched the Super Mario movie.
Oh, nice.
But I rewatched it in 4DX.
Ooh.
Which is pretty cool. I actually love 4DX, like, unironically.
It is good.
Like, I really do. I do enjoy it. Like, I also watched Guardians in 4DX.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, and... they had 3D glasses, and I think 3D is a bit of a stupid gimmick, but the 3D was awful in Mario. Like, really.
Was it? Like,
it was so pointless. Yeah, so pointless.
Oh, I'm surprised. It feels like it would be the kind of film that 3D would work with Mario.
I had a theory whilst watching Mario. I had a theory that films that are, like, going to be in 4DX, or, like, it's not agreed it's going to be 4DX... like, could be mandated to have a scene with water in. That's why I came to that conclusion during Mario. Like, every single 4DX film I've ever watched involves, like, water being splashed. I'm like, I think that this is a thing. But then there's no water scene in, like, Guardians. I was like, actually, I think that I was just wrong.
Maybe you were wrong, yeah.
Or maybe, like, slightly less. Like, Marvel, maybe they just have all creative control. Maybe that's
yeah,
why.
That's true.
But, like, I can see a world in which Peter Rabbit 2, which got a 4DX release, that someone's on the phone saying, please, can you add a water scene because we need 4DX?
That sounds great.
So the other thing I watched is a TV series. I watched the first season, or series, or whatever, of Nathan For You. And you told me you hadn't heard of this when I asked you the other day, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, I don't know how I explained it to you last time, but it is essentially Nathan Fielder, the comedian, and it's a reality comedy, you know, like, these people are real people, and yeah, he goes to real people and he pitches them kind of ridiculous ideas to save their business, i.e. you know, pitching to a retail shop, a clothes shop, that they should have a promotion that attractive people can shoplift. and they and creating a poo flavored yogurt for a yogurt company to try and attract the press, and then removing the poo flavored yogurt afterwards to then, you know, increase sales and so on and so forth. And he's kind of come up with these bizarre things, playing completely straight. The whole time he plays everything completely straight. And it's hard to put it in, it's hard to explain it without you like watching it. It's not going to be as that funny, but it is just hilarious. It is insanely funny. One of my favorite TV shows, comedy TV shows I've watched in a long time. So yeah, big shout out to Nathan.
Nice.
Nathan Fielder, Nathan for you. It's amazing. It's on Amazon Prime. I love it.
Nice.
I think that's pretty much the only thing I've seen really. Oh yeah, the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special as well.
Oh yeah, I watched that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess do you want to quickly talk about that now, I guess? It's fine, I think. Like it's not good, but like it's very schmaltzy, but I guess essentially it is a Christmas celebration for the fans, right? It's not being like advertised as like, you know, like everyone should come see this. I think it's like for Marvel fans.
Yeah.
It's like a Christmas special. It's just fine, really. You know, it does that. It gives you some like schmaltzy scenes and like some fan service, and it's kind of like, oh, isn't Christmas nice? And like, it's okay.
Yeah, I agree pretty much.
It does have very good music throughout, including playing a full Wombat song, followed by playing the best Christmas song, which is Christmas Rapping. So, you know, lovely. Shout out for that. Okay, let's move on to the news.
There isn't much news. There probably is, but to be honest, I haven't been keeping track of it. But the biggest news to come out of the past week or so, or however long it's been, is that the Writers Guild of America, the WGA, are on strike.
Yes.
They are striking for better pay, for also for AI to not be used by studios to write scripts, and for streaming residuals, which is good that the WGA are on strike. So we at the Now Showing podcast, we officially stand with the WGA and their strike.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, I was waiting for you to stop talking for me to say that the National Podcast categorically endorses the strike, and then you said it yourself.
I did. We're on the same wavelength.
Same wavelength, yeah.
The Mario movie has made $1 billion at the box office. So well done to Mario. Because of the writer's strike, there has been a lot of delays, a lot of interrupted productions. And in the past few hours or so, it's been announced that Blade has been shut down. Pre-production has been shut down because of the writer's strike. Completely. And also Fantastic Four is looking to begin filming in January, which is a while away. And there probably is more news, but like I say, I haven't really been paying attention to it.
Do you want some news? Do you want me to give you some news?
Yeah, give us some news, Sam.
Well, I want to start off with something that isn't really news, but I want to talk about it more than anything else, which is the Dune Part 2 trailer dropped.
Oh, yes. I haven't seen it. I'm waiting to see it in the cinema.
I think that might be the best trailer I've ever seen for a film.
Ooh, that excites me.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see a world in which Dune Part 2 is not amazing. Denny just absolutely knows what he's doing with that source material. He just knows what he's doing. It's amazing. It's amazing. And absolutely. Yeah. Long live Timothy Chalamet as well. Just great stuff.
I cannot wait to see the trailer. I cannot wait. It's taking all my strength to not just watch it, but I don't really watch trailers anymore on my Twitter when they drop. I just wait to see them in the cinema, and it's always great. I haven't even seen I've only seen one still from the trailer as well.
The one of him on the hill?
No, it's of Austin Butler screaming. That's it. I haven't seen anything else. I have literally no idea about anything that's in this trailer. Yeah. And I'm so hyped because Dune 1 was a 10 out of 10. It's fab. I haven't seen it since it came out. A rewatch is in order because it's just so good.
Amazing. I have seen it. Well, yeah, I saw it when it came out multiple times. Yeah, I haven't seen it since it came out either.
And it's a great it's a great poster as well. And I like, I tweeted the other day about how the logo, the color scheme, everything is exactly the same, because if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And it, all of the marketing from the first one was gorgeous and perfect. So they've stuck with it. The poster is very similar to the first poster. Everything about it's the same, and I love it. It's so cool. I cannot wait for this film. I cannot wait.
Pedro Pascal and Connie Nielsen have both joined the Gladiator sequel.
Ooh, nice. Did I tell a fun fact about the Gladiator sequel? My dad was on holiday in Malta a couple of weeks ago, and they're filming the Gladiator sequel in Malta. And he got talking to someone in a restaurant who said that they're in Gladiator 2. And my dad has no idea who it was. So for all we know, my dad could have had lunch with Paul Mescal.
Paul Mescal, yeah.
We just will never know, because my dad has no idea.
Yeah. Pedro Pascal is such the it guy at the moment, isn't he?
He really is.
Yeah, it's kind of pretty much came out of nowhere. You know, like,
yeah. But
even when he was like cast in Wonder Woman, it was not that big a deal. And then like now he's everywhere. The male General Ortega of sorts.
Yeah, it's wild, isn't it?
Yeah.
Carrie Fisher got a walk on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Who?
Carrie Fisher.
Oh, nice. There's a sequel to the Ben Stiller film Dodgeball. Is in is believed to be in production. I think it's rumored to be in production.
Oh, nice.
But, rumored to be in production. Reportedly in production. I love Dodgeball. Amazing film.
I like it as well.
But to be fair, the last time a film like this got a sequel was Zoolander, and that was the sequel to Zoolander is one of the worst films I've ever seen. So, Not having particularly high hopes. I think that's kind of... did you see Kathleen Kennedy's comments?
About James Bond. James Bondification of Star Wars.
Yeah, that she's looking more towards the James Bond model of how to keep excitement and how to you know, what schedule to release Star Wars in. And I can only say I completely agree with her. I think the James Bond model was a far more long-term model than Marvel. You know, I think releasing a film every year of Star Wars, people will start to turn off, because people are completionists. And if people haven't seen everything before, they're not going to watch the next thing. And, you know, the more films come out, the harder it is to keep up with it. Everyone sees every James Bond film because they come out every 4 years, every 5 years, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the thing that made Star Wars...
I'm tired of Marvel.
Yeah, I think the thing that made Star Wars so special was that for like 35, 40 years, we had 6 films. That was it. And then in the space of 10 years, we got another 6 films. And it's like, whoa. It kind of took what was special out of it for me. So I think less Star Wars is always a good film.
Did we not get 5 films, actually?
Oh, that is true. 5 films. 5 films and, like, 4 TV shows.
Yeah, that's true.
Less Star Wars is good for Star Wars.
Apparently most of the TV shows are shit as well.
Yeah, they are, really. I haven't seen Andor, though.
Apparently Andor's really, really good.
Yeah. I've heard impeccable things about Andor.
Yeah, me too.
Haven't seen it, though.
Pretty much all the news. I've got one piece of news I want to talk about with Guardians.
Go ahead.
Okay, so let's start off with we're reviewing 3 films today. So we'll do 2 short solo reviews of 2 films that one of us has watched. So we're going to start off with The Unlikely Pilgrimage of Harold Fry, which is a film which, to me, as someone that hasn't seen it, looks like the perfect companion piece to The Duke, which is a film, which is the same film as this that got released last year. Is that a fair statement?
In spirit, yeah, it is very similar. It's about a man called Harold Fry who decides one day that he is going to walk the length of England to go and see his friend who he met many years ago and who he hasn't seen for many years. He's going to walk the length of England because she's dying in a hospice, and he thinks him walking will keep her alive. It gives her something to look forward to. And it's like, I'll keep walking, you keep living. And it's just about his journey across England. And it is very similar to The Duke. It's a very, you know, it's that kind of British hopeful kind of film. And it's good. It's got good performances in. Everything about it's good. It's a decent film. There are a lot of weird things in it, though. Like, a lot of weird stuff happens. And I feel like it tried to do a little bit too much. There were, like, plot lines about addiction and suicide and, you know, all sorts of weird stuff. And I just thought this film was should have just been a simple film about this bloke walking across England. But, like, there's one scene where he meets someone in a train station. He stops at a train station to have a drink. And he's inside in this cafe and someone sits next to him. And this man, who's about 50, is talking to Jim Broadbent. And he's like, every week I meet up with this young man in a train station and I lick his trainers. And I noticed today that his trainer that I lick has got a hole in it. And I want to buy him a new pair of trainers. But I don't want to insult him. What should I do? And I'm like, why is that in this film?
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's really weird. It's really
what?
And there are loads of moments like that where it's just really bizarre things happen and you think, why is that in this film? This film should have just been stripped down basic, a man walking across England, inspiring, upbeat, British, like, what's the phrase I'm thinking of? I can't think of it, but like uplifting, lifting spirits, British drama that, you know, makes you chuckle every now and again. But it tries to do a little bit too much. So it was decent, but it wasn't great. It wasn't as good as The Duke. Certainly wasn't as good as Phantom of the Open, but it was Phantom decent. Open, yeah. It was decent. And like old people will love this.
Okay. Nice. Okay. Who's the director by the way?
I will find out in a second.
Would you like... I'm going to find that out while you keep me rating a man of the match.
Okay, so my man of the match would probably be... it sounds basic, but Jim Broadbent. He's in virtually every scene of the film, and his performance is really, really good. So yeah, I would say Jim Broadbent is my man of the match. And as far as... the director is Hetty McDonald, by the way. And... Yes. And she's great. It's very well directed, even if it is a bit weird at times. But the score I'd give it, I'd probably give it like a 6.5 out of 10. It's trying to do too much.
Yeah, that feels kind of the film. I'm not surprised at all by the rating. That kind of this film looks like a 7.
Yeah.
Let's talk about. I'm going to talk about Evil Dead Rise. So
yeah, talk to me about that.
Evil Dead Rise is Lee Cronin's new take on the classic horror franchise first created by Sam Raimi in the 80s. And it looks at a pair of teenagers that find an ancient book near their apartment complex, take it back to their gaff, and while during, I think, a power cut or something, and open it up. Some spirit comes out, possesses their mum. Mum goes on an evil murderous rampage. And it is... I have not seen any of the Evil Dead films other than this. I have not seen any of them. So this is my first delve into the franchise. And I think this is kind of a requel. You know, I think this is the idea is that this is kind of standalone. And I think there's nothing that I was in this film that made me feel like I had to watch any other one. But I was, with the phrase The Evil Dead and with the poster from the Raimi original, I'd always just kind of assumed there were zombie films. And the fact it's called The Evil Dead, it made me think... No, it's not at all.
Whoa. Zombie film.
It's like The Exorcist or something. They're like fighting against like...
Oh, damn.
Insane. They're up against an insanely powerful being that can, like, you know, it's like eating glass and like setting shit on fire, and like, you know, you stab it and it, like, you know, absorbs the knife, and it's like paranormal shit. And yeah, and it's an insanely fun time. Evil Dead Rise, it really does nail it. It has a lot of the downfalls of kind of typical, you know, quote unquote low budget horror, which I feel like is more of a style these days than particularly, you know, an actual amount of money. You know, that kind of low budget, especially a lot of the acting, it's like very over dramatic, the kind of thing you expect in films like that. Especially from the mother, the kind of the lead bad guy. You know, sometimes it's you're not sure if it's like it's pushing the you know the horrorness of it. Sometimes it almost kind of goes too far and starts to become a little bit kind of laughable, I find. But otherwise, yeah, it was good fun. The gore was so extreme to the point where, you know, I think, you know, gore, I'm fine with a bit of gore. Then it becomes excessive to the point where I dislike it. And then it gets to Evil Dead Rises amount where I'm like, this is a choice. And I quite appreciate that they've just gone for a choice of like, of how much blood can we throw on the screen at once? But for, yeah, again, you know, it's certainly not original. That's one thing I would certainly say about it. It is not an original concept. Of course, it's a remake of an old franchise, but even outside of Evil Dead, it's not an original concept. You know, with the evil spirits and the way that the monster acts, it's not original, but it does it very well. And one thing I will say is that it has probably one of the best title drops, one of the coolest title drops I'll ever see.
I have seen so much discussion about this title drop.
Yeah, it's so good. When it came in the cinema, when it happened, I kind of mouthed and was like, whoa, that was so sick. Like, it was like a noticeable, like, oh my God, that's why people have been talking about that. Like, it hit me out of nowhere. I didn't expect it. Amazing. Guardians of the Galaxy 3 also has a very good title drop, if I remember correctly. But yeah. Yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy Rises, good stand up, you know, pretty good horror film, you know. Nothing to send home about again, unoriginal, but good horror fun.
What would you rate it out of 10?
7 out of 10, I think, would be fair. 7.5, maybe.
Ooh, nice. What about Man of the Match?
And I would give my Man of the Match to Cameo, Bruce Campbell, who plays a priest over the radio.
Oh, nice.
But I would give... I'm actually going to give my Man of the Match to... It's a good question, really. I'm going to give it to Morgan Davies, who plays Danny.
Oh, nice.
He's one of the teenagers. Yeah, the one that brings back the book. But yeah, so it's a Man of the Match.
Very nice.
Okay, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 now, the big one.
The big one, yes.
As previously mentioned, this is James Gunn's last film working with Marvel before he goes to take over DC. It's also the last of the Guardians trilogy. At least, you know, as far as we know, it's the last of the Guardians films. I think it's kind of, that's been the whole thing building up to it. And stars the same set of people as the last set of films, which is Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Dave Bautista, Karen Gillan, Paul Clementiff, Vin Diesel, Bradley Cooper, Sean Gunn, but also adds a few new names, such as Will Poulter, who plays Adam Warlock, Maria Bakalova, who plays a Cosmo the dog, and Chukwudi Iwuji, I think is that's pronounced, who plays the High Evolutionary. So before we talk about it, I was just going to ask you about the aspect ratio thing. You're always on about aspect ratios. James Gunn has created 600 unique versions of Guardians of the Galaxy 3, Volume 3, with aspect ratios that best maximize various types of cinema screens. Wherever you go to see it, you're going to see the best version, says Evan Jacobs. How does that make you feel, having received that information?
That makes me feel nice. I'm glad that that's a thing, yeah.
Interesting. I wasn't sure if you'd be like, oh, you know, I feel like films should have, like, you know, that one as a ratio.
I think it's very cool. Can be very fluid, as long as it's like you say, is If he says it's the best way to view it, then it's the best way to view it. He's the guy who made it.
You know, David Lynch keeps moaning about people watching films on their phone. Like, I know he's an old guy, but does that kind of annoy you a bit? Because that kind of annoys me a bit.
It doesn't annoy me per se. I kind of get what he's saying, but it is quite silly.
So David Lynch keeps moaning, like saying that, like, if you watch a film on the phone, you haven't watched a film. But I think now we're talking about like high quality headphones most people have, you know, AirPods and shit, high quality audio, right? And you've got a screen which is functionally as big as a cinema screen when you're holding it close to your face. You know, you're still seeing the same amount of size, and phone screens are incredibly high resolution. I understand he's an old dude. Everyone's like, oh, you know, why are you people getting annoyed at him? He's literally like 70. But I think, I don't know, I feel like he needs to shut up because, I don't really think there's any difference between watching a film on your phone or watching a film on a laptop or watching a film on a small TV. I don't know. It's just,
I don't know. I'm not particularly like offended by it. I just think it is a bit silly.
I've watched a lot of great films firstly on my phone and loved them just as much as I probably would have watched. Like, I think I watched Being John Malkovich the first time on my phone. You know, and that's one of my favorite films. And I've seen it on screens afterwards, and it's no better on screens, really. It's just the same film.
Oh, nice. Now, I do prefer watching things in the cinema.
Yeah, obviously, I do prefer things watching in the cinema. But I'm just saying, comparing it to watching it on a
TV. But yeah, I have watched films on my phone, and it's not a horrible experience. It's I've seen the film, regardless of what David.
I watched Coda on my phone.
Maybe that's why you didn't like it. If you saw it in the cinema, you would have loved it.
It does kind of have the production quality of like a Smosh video anyway. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Okay. Have we got any more? I don't think we've got any more to say. Let's just get into it. Oh, yeah. What's the film about? So, basically, to the basic summary of the film is very early on, Will Poulter's Adam Warlock comes down to nowhere, which is where the Guardians of the Galaxy live, and almost kills Rocket. And the film follows our Guardians in a race to try and find the passcode to Rocket's inbuilt self-destruct unit so that they can save him. And keep the Guardians together. And whilst we do this, we also get a lot of Rocket's backstory. So, Lewis, you've been very, very critical of the MCU in the past.
Yeah.
Quickly, firstly, what was your opinion on the first two Guardians of the Galaxy films?
I have a special attachment to the first two Guardians films because Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1 was the first date that I ever went on with my girlfriend. Back in 2014, it was the first date that we ever went on. So we've always kind of been like that, the Guardians 1 is our film type thing. So I loved it kind of for that reason, and I haven't revisited them in a long time. But I really like them from memory.
Yeah, me too. Okay, so what do you think of Guardians 3?
Guardians 3 is... You know, it's complicated for me to talk about my thoughts on this because I think Guardians 3 is probably just as good, if not better, than Guardians 1 and Guardians 2. But the magic has just gone for me. I didn't enjoy it. I didn't find myself having fun. I was bored. I kept checking my watch. It never particularly interested me. But like I say, I don't think that's an indictment of its quality. It's probably just as good as the first two, which I loved when I first saw them, but like I say, the magic has just gone. If I watched Guardians 1 and 2 now, I'd probably feel the same way about them. I just think that the superhero and specifically Marvel magic has just gone for me. There are a few moments where it kind of shines through, but a lot of the time I feel like James Gunn is beginning to feel like a parody of himself. Like, it feels like someone was tasked with writing a film and making a film in the style of James Gunn and dialed it up to 11, except he's actually James Gunn. So it just feels a bit weird, and it doesn't always work for me. I think if you're the type, you know, this is the first Marvel film to say fuck, And if you're the type, did you not know that?
This is the. I said that on the podcast before, like in the news that was going to happen.
Oh, I don't. Maybe it is, but yeah,
it's a surprise that it's not been.
Yeah, because in PG-13 films, you're allowed one F-bomb, and Marvel just have never taken advantage of that until now. But it's the kind of film I feel like where if you find someone saying the word fuck funny, you'll love this film. If you don't, then it's not for you. Because I put that on Twitter and said, like, if you're the kind of person who finds it funny when someone swears, you're going to love this film. And someone said, oh, I feel like this is aimed at me because I loved that joke. And I was like, it wasn't a joke, though. There was no joke. He literally just said fuck.
Like, I can't even remember him saying anyone saying fuck, to be honest.
Yeah, it literally, he says to Mantis, open the fucking door in the car. And I was like, that's not a joke. He just says fuck. And if you can find that funny, that's kind of the humor.
His anger is funny.
I mean, I guess so. But I feel like if you're the kind of person who finds that funny, then you'll find the whole film funny and you'll enjoy the whole film. But yeah, like I say, the music is good, as it always is with Guardians. I really hated the score, though. I thought the score was just really bad. Very rarely do I watch a film where I think I hate the score. I either love the score or the score just kind of passively exists in the background. There were several points in this where I was like, this score is just not it. I'm not enjoying the music in this. I thought it was okay. I thought some of the things that they did in it that I can't get into without getting into spoilers. If we do a spoiler section, I will, but if we don't, I won't. That kind of muddled, and I thought were a bit muddled. The performances were good. The cinematography was a bit dull, but, you know. Yeah. Like I say, it's difficult for me to talk about them because it's probably just as good. It's just I've lost the magic. I've lost my ability to care about these films. So there were no emotional stakes. There was no, like, I just didn't care about what I was watching. I just wanted it to be over. And when it was over, I was like, cool. And, I was talking to Mo about it because I went to see this with Mo. And he said it's probably the best third act in Marvel in recent memory, perhaps ever. And I was like, yeah, it's probably better than the third act of the last few Marvel films. But to be honest, I can't remember the last act of the last few Marvel films. And I'm sure in a couple of months, I won't be able to remember the third act of this one either. Which, again, is not an indictment of its quality. It is probably better. It's just like, I don't care about it anymore. So, yeah. Although, I will say the villain, I can't remember his name.
The High Evolutionary.
He was great. He felt threatening and scary. He felt much more threatening than Kang, even, who was being set up as like the next bit. Kang is the next Thanos. And I thought that the High Evolutionary felt far more menacing and threatening than Kang ever did. I enjoyed his performance. What did you think about Guardians? Did you love it? I will say quickly before you go on, it was a nice send-off to these characters. They all got a nice arc that was complete. So it was a nice finale to this trilogy. So it was a nice finale. So what do you think? Are you more enthusiastic about it? Did you love it? Did you hate it? How do you feel?
Yeah, well, I was a big fan of the first two Guardians films. And to be honest with you, I think I'm just a big fan of Gunn's work in general. I'm a massive fan of all of the superhero stuff he's done. And this is no different. This is no different at all. I absolutely loved Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. It actually made me, think, which I thought I have fairly often, because I actually do like a decent number of the Marvel films that come out. But it did make me think, there is such a gulf in quality between the people, like, between the golden age of Marvel directors, Marvel films, and now. The comparison, like, James Gunn, who's got a real style and is, I think a very, very good writer and a very good director, comparing his work with stuff like Black Widow or even, things, or Eternals or Shang-Chi or anything like that. I mean, they're okay films, but the quality between, you know, something like that or and this or Thor Ragnarok or, you know, Black Panther, I think the gap between the kind of lower tier Marvel films and the high tier Marvel films is immense. I think a lot of the things you said are true. I think I didn't notice the score, to be honest. I honestly could not say. I don't remember any of it. Cinematography was fairly average. But yeah, I thought it was really fun. I thought it was a really nice send up for the characters. I really love the tone of it. I think when on the comedic level, I think there is something that Taika Waititi was aiming for in Love and Thunder, but completely missed. I think that tone is almost the same here, but it doesn't miss. I think James Gunn really is a lot better at that style of comedy. You know, especially if we're going off of their most recent films as examples. I think performance-wise, I think Chris Pratt is really good here. It's probably his best performance I've seen. I also think that, as you said, Chikwudi Iwuji, the High Evolutionary, one of the best villains in a Marvel film, not just recent Marvel film, just one of their best villains ever. Menacing, you know, actually a psychopath for once. You know, not nice that he's like...
Yeah.
You know, it's nice to have a sympathetic villain once he's actually just insane, and it's kind of amazing watching him thinking he is sane from such a kind of twisted worldview. And I'll say that there are a few moments that I thought were generally fairly disturbing body horror. Well, kind of animal body horror. There's about three or four scenes where I was like, especially, you know, the introduction of Floor, I believe the character's name was, that fucked me up. The character of Floor was a very scary character to me. Really creeped me out. Mm. And a lot of the scenes where animals being transformed and stuff, I thought kind of grossed me out to a degree. And I've obviously got a far higher limit for what can gross me out than you do. All these things, you know, generally all these things are great. You know, the color of it, you know, the color grading is great, especially for a Marvel film. Then the writing's good. I think a great send off for all the characters. I think, you know, the performance is great, villain's great, everything about the film is great. But fuck me, it is so long. This might have been the longest film I've ever watched. 2.5 hours felt like four. And I think mainly the reason why, and again, you know, it's all technically great, all really high quality. I can't really moan about anything that happened in the runtime. But it felt so long. I think partly it's because it really builds up this three-act structure. And then after the third act, or what you feel is the third act ends, you know, you've got a very simple beginning, middle, end. Event happens. This is us doing it. This is us finishing the mission. That happens. And then it turns out you're actually banging in the middle of the second act. You have this, you're like, oh, okay, the film should be over now. And then boom, this like hour long epilogue where it actually turns out this is what we need to do now. And like, because you're so ready for the film to end, everything afterwards feels like an afterthought. And then you're just sitting there going, okay, when's the credits going to start rolling? And then they don't, and then they don't, and they don't. And the film is great, but just really, because of that, it really felt like it dragged. More so than definitely more so than the first two films, and more so just generally in the genre. I think Will Port was great as well. You know, I quickly shout him out as well. I think Will Port was great. You know, everyone was talking about how they're going to, what was going to happen with Rocket going into it. I was a bit apprehensive seeing how they're going to do it. They did it wonderfully from start to finish. A lot of the flashback scenes were really touching. And I'll admit, I dropped a tear in a Marvel film. You know, I had a tear. Not I didn't cry, but a tear came out of my eye at one point in this film. Actually, at 2 points in this film, maybe, if I might be right in saying. 2 points in this film.
Oh, wow.
A tear came out my eye. So yeah, very positive from me and Guardians. And I've got to say as well, one thought I had during this film, I thought I'm really, really excited about DC from now. I'm really excited about what he's going to do here, because in a sea of films which are feeling more and more tame and more similar. Gun style seems to add a little bit more excitement to that mix for me. You know, yeah. I think this stands out, you know, against a sea of Shang-Chi's, Black Widows, and Eternals.
Yeah, so. I kind of get what you mean. It is crazy though, because several people who enjoyed the film a lot more than me said that they had issues with the pacing. Shocking, I didn't have any issues with the pacing. I thought the pacing was fine. It didn't feel overly long for me. As much as I kept like checking my watch, it wasn't because I felt like it was overly long. It was just because I wasn't particularly interested in it. I didn't really have any issues with the pacing. I thought you mentioned Will Poulter. I forgot about Will Poulter. I really think that he was wasted. And I think his character was unnecessary. I think you could have just cut that whole thing out, and it could have shaved off like 10 minutes of screen time. You know, like you say, figure out, like you said at the beginning, he is the reason that the film kicks off with Rocket being injured. But I feel like you could figure out a different way to injure Rocket, because I really feel like he was just superfluous to the whole thing. It would have been better if he got cut, in my opinion. I will say, though, the highlight of this film for me was Pom Clementeef as Mantis. She is fabulous as Mantis. And I thought the same thing when I was watching the holiday special as well. She is fabulous. She is really funny. She's really emotional. She's great at the dramatics. She's great at the comedy. She's great at all. She's
really emotional, eh? Eh?
Yeah, she is. That is true. Yeah, she really was the best performance in this for me. I really enjoyed Pom Clementeef.
To be fair, it's probably between her and Stallone for me.
Yeah. Yeah, Sylvester Stallone is great in this.
What a jump scare that was. I wasn't prepared for Sylvester Stallone. And then I completely forgot he was even in the second one. Oh my God, Sylvester Stallone's in this. Yeah, I'm a big Adam Warlock fan. You know, I actually am a big Adam Warlock fan. It's one of my favorite. Well, not one of my favorite, but I'm a big fan of him in the comics. Adam Warlock is one of my favorite characters. I'll go on record. I do think he was underused. But then there was also part of me that just is like, I was also just like happy, kind of like pointing at the screen, like, you know, like Marvel fan.
Yeah.
You know, oh my God, thing I know. I was kind of like, oh, look, Adam Warlock. That's so cool.
Yeah, that's fair.
Another thought I had, which is like knowing like where Will Porter's come from as like the kind of eternal school bully type to like now where he is now. Where I stood there, I thought, I cannot believe that this guy's hot now. Like, how did that happen?
Yeah, it's wild, isn't it? Him and his eyebrows.
Him and Elizabeth Debicki, who's, again, you know, great, always great, love her.
Yeah.
Him and Elizabeth Debicki really had like fairy godmother, Prince Charming relationship.
They really did. That is a great parallel to draw.
Yeah. Really good. Loved Cosmo the dog as well. Oh, it was just so good. I actually really loved it, but it went on for so long.
So what are you thinking score-wise?
I'm going to give this an 8.5. You know, I think that it would be maybe in the conversation for my favourite Marvel films if it didn't have the pacing issues it had.
Yeah.
You know, everything about it is amazing, but I shouldn't be sitting there with still half an hour, 40 minutes to go, thinking, are we wrapping this up now?
Yeah, that's fair.
But I was feeling that.
I think...
I'm assuming it's hard for you to even get a given rating, surely, if you're this apathetic to it.
Yeah, this is the issue with Marvel films that I've been feeling for quite some time now, is I feel just very apathetic towards them. So I'll probably give this a 7 out of 10. It was great. It was decent. Like I've said about 5 times now, it's probably just as good as the first two. And I enjoyed the first two when they first came out, but the magic has just gone. So yeah, 7 out of 10. I'm glad you enjoyed it, and I'm glad that a lot of people are enjoying it. But it's not my cup of tea.
I think that you're not wrong with the magic being out of it to a degree. But I saw someone put a very good tweet out, which is the worst thing that happened to the Guardians is Infinity War. And I as much as I love Infinity War, I kind of understand what they mean. I feel a lot of the problems with Guardians comes from their characterization outside of their films. You know, also, you know, both the Avengers films and Love and Thunder. Mm-hmm. When they're not being written by Gunn, they are far more one-dimensional.
Yeah.
And perhaps some of the decisions about what happens to the characters, you know, probably weren't in Gunn's, you know, purest intentions of what would happen to the Guardians. I think some of the biggest flaws about this film is things that didn't happen within this film. You know,
I probably agree with that.
Which is a shame. But I think as well, if you're talking about MCU in totality, I think I'd also like to point this out. I think Guardians is the best trilogy in Marvel. I think for me, you know,
it's definitely
better than the first three, four films. Definitely better than the Captain America films. Spider-Man is the only one that comes close, in my opinion. And I haven't seen the third Ant-Man, but I don't imagine much good of it.
That's fair. What about Man of the Match then?
My Man of the Match, it's a very tough one. Of course you'll be inclined to give it to Stallone. but if we're not going to Stallone, part of me wants to give it to Bradley Cooper for his voice acting. Which is great. But I think I'm going to have to give it to James Gunn in his directing rather than his writing. I do love his writing, but okay. I think you can really feel his stamp on this, which is one of the problems that I have had with Marvel films in general, is that you do not feel the director's stamp enough. That, of course, wasn't true with Black Panther, but... you know, again, if you watched Eternals, gave me 100, 200 guesses, there's no chance I'd ever guess it was Chloe Zhao. Obviously, I don't know the Widow's director before it, and I'll be honest with you, I don't know who it is now. So, I know what you mean. This film feels directed, which is a rarity for Marvel films.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I think I'm going to give my Man of Match to Pom Clementeef, purely because every second that she was on the screen, I really enjoyed her. I think she was really fab. She's in it a lot, and she does fabulously in every scene that she's in. So yeah, my Man of Match will be Pom Clementeef.
She's Chris Pratt's sister now.
Yes, I didn't know that until the day before.
Yeah.
I messaged the group chat and said, does anything significant happen in the holiday special or can I skip it? And I decided to watch it.
Nice. More than ever, I now feel like now is the time for me to get off the Marvel train.
Yeah, I was thinking that throughout. I thought this feels like a swan song for phases 1 through 3. This for once didn't feel like it was setting up the next one. This felt like a goodbye, and I think I did enjoy that about it, because even Endgame, which was the big finale of the first saga in Marvel, was still very much setting up what was to come. This felt like a goodbye to all of these characters. Even though it does set up the next phase of Guardians, it felt like a goodbye. It felt like an end. So I feel like this really was the swan song for the period of Marvel that I did enjoy when I was a kid and you know, when I used to enjoy it. This feels like the final goodbye for this era of Marvel, which is quite sad because I did used to love it. But yeah, this is quite a good hopping off point, I think, if you're getting a bit tired of it.
I think so. I needed to see Black Panther 2 after Chadwick died. I love Guardians, and I needed to see the conclusion there. I guess everything else has kind of either died or it's kind of become Marvelified to the point where I don't really care about it. I mean, part of me wants to get excited about the Marvels because I love Captain Marvel so much and I love Brie Larson, but...
Yeah.
I don't even know. I just feel like... Even though I like it in concept, you know, just be able to see the character again or whatever, I think that is going to be Marvelified to the point beyond saving. You know, I just think like that just seems so, you know, never has a Marvel film felt so corporate than the idea of the Marvels.
Yeah, I agree.
So yeah, I mean, it's going to be a tough sell for me. I mean, I probably will watch it, but like, I'm now at the point where I'm now skipping Marvel films. Like, yeah. I skipped Ant-Man and I skipped Shazam, which I know is a DC film, but it's all the same shit. Yeah. And like, that's big for me. Like, it's been a long time since I've started skipping superhero films, but I just, Guardians, a lot of the last glimmers of light in superhero for me just kind of went out. And it was a good run. It was a good run. But yeah, I think it's going to take more and more to entice me now. I'll watch the Avengers, you know, but yeah, not so good. Okay. So, yeah.
I'll probably be able to edit this down to under an hour. So we have stuck to our target, I think.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay. We might have. Okay. Thank you very much for listening, guys. We'll see you next time we talk about another Marvel film. Well, we'll do like a classic about Iron Man.
Yes, that would actually be interesting to revisit the early Marvel films. See if the magic.
Most of the early Marvel films suck.
I really enjoy Phase 1. Last time I watched it, Phase 1 was great. Last time, Thor 1, Captain America 1, Iron Man 1, great.
There is one good film in Phase 1, and that's Iron Man. Everything else is like at best like
hot take from Sam. It would actually be interesting to revisit the earlier.
It's mad MCU that you're films. Like mo. You're like more positive about Marvel than me in that respect.
I know. Yeah, that is wild.
In like the most iconic era of Marvel, you prefer to me.
Yeah, because I did used to love Marvel, and I don't think the quality has declined. I just think it's not for me anymore. I don't feel like the quality's declined. I think the
highs are still high, but I think the lows are really low.
And yeah, I guess so. The lows
like if you go Phase 3, for example, like I think in Phase 3 there's one film that I think's average, which I think if I remember correctly, I think Civil War. I think everything else I think is like very good. Like I really enjoy it all, you know. Whereas like almost every Marvel film that comes out, I like on release, and then as soon as I like get and I review it positively on the podcast, and then every like day following that, I realize more and more how average it was. Like Love and Thunder, which I gave like a really positive review, and I look back and I think that was fucking shit. What was on about? Or Black Panther, or not Black Panther. Black Panther was good. Even Black Panther 2 is not as good as I first thought.
Yeah,
you know. I think the quality has declined. I do think the quality definitely has declined. I think that if you take like any kind of random film in Phase 3, like I don't know, say Doctor Strange or something, it's way better than Shang-Chi or Eternals. Or
I don't know, I don't necessarily think so, but it has been a long time since I've seen that era of Marvel, so maybe I'm wrong.
Right, we have no idea when we'll be back because we've both got quite busy schedules coming up. So
yeah, it's Eurovision
to the next episode. Eurovision, excited?
I'm so excited!
Come on, Sam Ryder, do it again for you, mate. yeah, okay, very nice.
But we will see you in the future at some point.
Yeah, probably
for our Doctor Who episode.
This probably won't be the last episode of the podcast. The legendary Sam Houston will return.
Yeah.
Okay. If anything, you are. I'm like Star-Lord, and you're probably like maybe John C. Reilly from the second Guardians film. Just joking. You're probably like, I don't know, you're not cool enough to be any of them, really.
Wow.
You're maybe like
Sylvester Stallone's like, character.
Nah, I don't. Maybe you're, I think you're Sean Gunn's character.
I'll take that.
Yeah, I was going to call him a bit of a weasel, and then I realised that he actually also played a weasel. So
he did, yeah.
Okay, so you can find us, guys, on Twitter at NowShowingPod, and you can find us individually on Twitter at Sam H Media and Lewis JWR. You can find us on Letterboxd at Sam Houston and Lewis JWR respectively. If you enjoy the podcast, the best thing you can do is tell your friends, but also you can give us a 5-star rating on whatever app you use to listen to this podcast. It helps us go up in the rankings. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you all next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.